All right. Everyone is in. It is 10 o'clock and we have the recording going. So whenever you would like to start.
Perfect. Thank you so much. All right. Good morning. I'm David Ittner, Chair of the Washington State Funeral Cemetery Board. The time is now 10 a.m. on Wednesday, May 28, 2025, and I'm calling this regular board meeting to order. We'll be providing an opportunity for public comment later in this meeting. As a courtesy, we encourage everyone to mute their mics or your phone if you called in when you are not speaking to reduce the background noise when others are speaking. Also, for board members, to help us capture information correctly, please state your name when making comments. Thank you. Agenda item number two is roll call. Alyssa, would you please call roll? Board members, please respond if you are in attendance.
Okay, I'll start with you. Chair Ittner?
Present.
Vice Chair Gutierrez?
Here.
And then Board Member Ward? Here. Board Member Little?
Here.
Board Member Cameron?
Here.
Board Member Lovegren?
Here.
And I believe that's everybody. So back to you.
Where is the host thing?
All right.
Any of these have been accepted?
I don't know. All right. Did you solve the problem getting power out there?
Nope. We have someone that needs to mute their mic, please. All right, moving on to agenda item number three, approval of the agenda. We need a motion for that approval.
This is Dante. I move that we approve the agenda.
Thank you, Dante.
This is Pete. I'll second.
Thank you. Is there any discussion or additions to the agenda? All right, hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, motion passes. Approval of minutes, agenda item number four, also looking for an approval for the minutes of the February 19th, 2025 meeting.
This is Rick. I'll go ahead and approve the minutes.
Thank you, Rick. Do we have a second?
I'll second. This is Paul.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Any discussion, corrections, changes? All right. Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. Minutes are approved. Thank you so much. Moving on to agenda item 5.1. Report from the International Conference of Funeral Service Examining Boards annual conference. I'll open the floor for the folks that attended that to provide their reports or comments.
Well, this is Pete. I was the only folk to attend. it was another great annual meeting, as those who have been to their meetings can attest to, full of information. Lots of good sessions, lots of relative discussions, including labor shortages and how different states are looking at tackling the upcoming labor shortage. So I got some good information for our committee for that. I got lots and lots of questions during the breaks and on lunches and afterwards about natural organic reduction. There's a great deal of interest around that now around the country, and fielded a lot of questions and had some follow-up conversations and emails for some folks asking questions on that. So very well attended. I'd encourage next year anybody who's thinking about it to please go. You will learn a lot. You make some good connections and meet a lot of good people.
Great. Thank you, Pete. Appreciate the report on that. All right. Look forward to talking about what you learned down there relative to labor shortages and other issues. Moving on to agenda item 5.2, we have a rulemaking discussion, and I'll turn it over to Sydney.
All right, thank you. This is going to be a continuation of some conversations that we've had with the board recently regarding some rulemaking activities that we've been trying to move forward with. In particular, that was in the packet provided to the board ahead of the meeting, we did identify some areas of risk that have come up with some of the rulemaking that we've been trying to do and trying to move forward with just as part of our due diligence. And as we've been working through those processes, we've identified some of those risks. And then as we were kind of preparing for this discussion with the board, just to kind of have the conversation, make sure that we come back and are making the board fully aware of all of the risks. Pam and Riley reached out to me and said that they also have quite a few areas of the rules that they've identified that need some update, things that they're seeing in the field and are coming across, and just some loopholes and just some general holes that we want to make sure that we're fully closing as we work through this process. So rather than trying to piecemeal the rulemaking, we thought we just had one or two items and those we could push forward on. But given that we've identified so many areas of the WAC that need to be updated now, we wanted to kind of shift the conversation a little bit with the board and see if the board would be willing to look at setting up a WAC review committee to help us make those changes and really do a thorough review of our rules, make sure that we're catching all of those potential areas for update, that we are able to do our due diligence, you know, through all of our processes, catch any areas of risks that are out there, and that we address it kind of all as one. You know, if it were one or two, you know, seemingly small things, that would be one thing, but it's grown enough. And it's, I've kind of been joking with the team, in the background. We have several WAC updates going on right now. So this is definitely not, something we went looking to request, but I do think it's probably the safest route to go for the board and for our licensees, just to make sure that we're fully addressing everything that we need to all at once and doing it right one time rather than trying to piecemeal it. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, take input from the board, and you know, see if that's something the board would be willing to look at.
So just to clarify, Sydney, and this committee, so this the 5-year cap on the internship, that discussion, that piece would be part of this process.
It would be. We've identified some risks on that. We've also had several constituents reach out to us before the rulemaking paperwork could even start, raising several concerns and questions that we want to make sure are fully discussed. And just given that there are so many different pieces that we're now having come in, we feel like it's better to move that conversation forward with a committee and then bring all of that information back to the full board for a decision on a WAC update.
Okay, thank you. My thought would be, again, I agree with what you're saying. I understand the need to make sure we're dotting I's, crossing T's, and looking at, you know, the risk analysis. I would just, given the importance that I've felt and heard from constituents on the labor shortage issues and the 5-year internship piece, I would request that committee get set up rather quickly and starts getting to work so we can make that piece, you know, at least make a decision. I mean, I think we've already made a decision on it, so I just want to make sure that it doesn't get delayed too much longer, but I understand the need for evaluating the risk that's been, I guess, talked about or discussed or discovered. So,
yeah, and with that 5-year cap, it's part of the risks that we've identified are when the cap was put in place, there were some other components that 5-year cap kind of got tied into just as a procedural thing, and now trying to unwind that, it's proving to be a little more complicated than simply removing the cap. We want to make sure that we're looking at all of the different components and pieces and have a chance to thoroughly discuss those, and that we unwind any of that properly so that we don't mm-hmm. have another issue down the line.
Yep, that makes sense. I'd be happy to serve on that committee. So, any other comments from the board?
This is Rick Little. I would be glad to serve on that, but I don't know how long I'm going to be on the board since I'm just a fill-in for a while here. So.
So as of right now, we are not aware of any applicants to fill your position. We've been asking.
That's okay.
So if anybody knows of any applicants that would like to submit through the governor's office, but as of right now, we don't have any. So.
And that would be for a cemetery representative to represent. Yeah. So I would be glad to help with this if that's the case.
Any further discussion?
We will be reaching out and scheduling that committee meeting as soon as possible, and we'll get moving on that work quickly. We'll also have Pam and Riley involved in those discussions, so hopefully we've got a really good start to them. We just want to make sure we're doing our thorough due diligence and reviewing the chapter in its entirety. So that we catch all of it at once.
Make sure. It makes sense. I appreciate that.
Okay. All right.
Thank you, Sydney. We'll move on to item 5.3, discussion of the 2025 board goals and priorities.
So this is going to be me again. I've spoken with or emailed with Chair Itner and Vice Chair Gutierrez Mora about the board goals for 2025. We haven't identified any new areas of focus for the year, so we'll just kind of be staying the course, focusing on pet cemeteries and the barriers to licensure and continuing to address the licensing future. So those are the priorities that we've been focused on, and I think the work that we continue to bring to you is very much in line with that. So if it's all right, we don't need a formal motion or anything from the board. Just as long as everybody's in agreement that those are good to move forward with, we'll just set that as the intention for the year and kind of start looking at 2026.
Yeah, I think all those items are still on the list. And we've made good headway in a lot of different areas. We still have to close the loop on a few of those. And also there's the disposition facility equipment concern that we'll be keeping at the forefront of things as well. So, all right. That takes us to agenda item number six. 6.1 is the election of officers. The second meeting of every year, the Funeral and Cemetery Board holds elections for officers for the following 12 months. So we will need nominations and votes for the chair and vice chair positions. The first position to elect is the chair. And at this time, I would open the floor for nominations, and this does require a motion for approval.
This is Dante. I'll go ahead and move that we retain and keep David Itner as our chair.
This is Paul. I'll second that.
All right. Thank you, Dante and Paul. Is there any discussion? All right. Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Hearing none, motion passes. We'll move on to the same process for the vice chair position. We have a nomination from the floor.
This is Pete. I'm going to nominate Dante to remain in his position as vice chair for the next term.
Thank you, Pete.
This is Rick. I'll go ahead and second that.
Thank you, Rick. Any discussion for the motion?
This is Alyssa. Can I just clarify, Pete, are you making a motion to nominate? I just want to be clear for our meeting minutes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Any discussion? Don't believe so. All right. Moving on, all in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, the motion passes. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item 6.2, licensing future task force discussion. Sydney will begin that piece as well.
And really, this is just going to be an introduction, then I will turn it over to the Licensing Future Task Force Committee members. At the last board meeting, we had a member of the public ask a question about what the board is doing to address the potential shortfall of future licensees with the anticipated rising death rate. And so just wanted to reintroduce that was where this item moved up into new business rather than in our usual committee and task force reports. It was really an opportunity for the board to be able to answer that question when they couldn't during the public comment portion, as well as to provide just a general update of what's going on with the task force. So with that, I will turn it over to the task force members to address.
All right. Thank you, Sydney. So I'll just kind of begin reference what we've been looking at. We've kind of talked about it a little bit already, but again, looking at how do we bring in and retain good quality people into the profession. And one of the things we've obviously looked at is the 5-year internship cap and, being able to, have folks that have been in the industry who maybe don't have that, the means or the ability or the time frame at this point to, go back and get the educational piece or finish the educational piece, extending that internship piece so that we don't end up inadvertently forcing folks out of the profession. So there's that piece. And the other piece that we've been reviewing and looking at is the alternative pathways to licensure. And that's, I think Sydney brought an example to our attention in one of the meetings early on of what the architecture board does in terms of an alternative pathway to becoming a licensed architect that includes, and Sydney, you can provide a little more detail here, I would imagine, but it's essentially the equivalent of that, the on-the-job training piece that, along with meeting certain criteria and other metrics, maybe the educational requirement is met with that on-the-job piece. So, Sydney, if you have any commentary on that particular item, please feel free to jump in.
Yeah, I'd be happy to share more about that. So, with the architect program, they, on a national level, but with Washington kind of leading the charge, they've set up an experience program where additional experience can be utilized in place of education, and it doesn't replace the education component. It's just an alternative way of obtaining that. So they still have to demonstrate knowledge and experience in certain levels and in certain areas and show that they've met that education through an alternative means. So that's one of the components that we've talked about with the task force is there a way to mirror that within the funeral and cemetery, in particular the funeral director and embalmer space, to see if that's an opportunity to kind of pioneer something new. And so looking at just different opportunities that way, they've also discussed, you know, similar professions that bring a good amount of education, just maybe in, education in the same areas that we look for and that we require as part of our licensure. For example, like EMT paramedics, firefighters who have that strong science background, they have quite a bit of education in a lot of the areas that we require for licensure, but maybe don't fit identically with what we see in the traditional education pathway. And so just looking at, are there opportunities for, you know, some crossover work with that? So just exploring different potential areas.
Thank you, Sydney. Elizabeth, I see you have your hand up there.
Yes. So the one thing I'll note about architects and engineers and many of the professions is that they have statutory authorization to use experience in place of education. And in order to, I think in order to use experience in place of education, you need the statutory authority to do that. Right now, you have a very kind of limited ability to, or you have a very specific description of what education looks like for you, and it's required. So
right.
I think
they've been looking at in the context of, okay, what do we have the authority to do? What would require a legislative change? But trying to take a very holistic look at what are some opportunities that are available to us, and then what would be the pathway to achieve that.
Right. Okay. Wanted to kind of make it clear that this isn't necessarily rulemaking. It might have to be some legislative changes as well. So just thought
we're absolutely. Yeah. They told me I didn't have the power to do anything like that. So no.
All by yourself.
Yep. All right. Any other commentary from committee members on that piece? Pete, I know you've been heavily involved.
Yeah, nothing more than what has already been discussed. One of the issues that was brought up at the annual conference meeting is, you know, the different education levels that are required for different states. And, you know, with Washington having an associate's degree, there are several states that require a bachelor's degree, and those states are facing a bigger uphill battle than we are. And discussion has been raised about just lowering the degree requirement, you know, whether that's something to look at, you know, for those states. I don't believe that we should be dealing or talking about, you know, dropping education completely, but it's complicated, and there's a lot of discussion going on around the country on it right now. So there is no easy fix.
Well, it's good that we're, you know, again, we're, as a board, this is an important item for us. I know it's important for, you know, people in the profession. And so we'll keep working towards it. And I appreciate Sydney's help in keeping us organized and moving forward in towards some path forward. So, all right, moving on to agenda item 6.3, college level examination program discussion. Sydney, I'll turn it back over to you.
All right. Thank you very much. So we have received a question from our licensing team regarding the acceptance of college level examination program credits as part of a college course requirement. So these are courses such as like English 101, 102 college student can essentially test out of, meaning that their knowledge already encompasses that level of understanding in that area. And so they take an examination and it allows them to still receive that college credit. And it shows on their transcript as receiving credit for that level of course, but they don't, go through the entire course. So they're essentially just not repeating the knowledge that they've already gained. And so this is one that we weren't really certain on, and was kind of a new question for us. We wanted to bring this to the board again. It shows on the transcript that they've received credit for those courses, but I think we've had an applicant who has been very upfront and sharing that they did that the credit showing on their transcript, a portion of that was obtained through these CLEAP examinations. And so they were questioning whether or not that was acceptable to the board. And so that's where this came from. And it's wanting to help provide us some direction on whether or not that is acceptable to the board.
All right. Thank you, Finney. I'll open it up for comments here.
Well, this is Pete. I guess my initial reaction in reading this and hearing about it, is this something that should be reviewed by the license future task force first? Or is this just a general question for the board?
I would defer to the board's discretion on that. If you guys would like to take a deeper look at it, we could certainly ask the licensing future task force to do that for you and bring back a report on it. Or if you guys want to move forward with a direction, we're okay either way. We just, like I said, this was a new one for us, so we kind of wanted to see how the board wanted to proceed.
So this is Dante. Before we bounce this to another committee or discuss bouncing it to another committee, is this just a one-off or does this happen often? I'm assuming this is probably like one individual and it doesn't happen on a regular basis. So I don't know that, you know, I mean, we could definitely just say that we approve it. I mean, like you said, the person could have just let this sail by. They had to like disclose that it was on their transcript.
And given that was my thinking as well, is, you know, this could be occurring much more widely. And we just happen to have somebody who was very upfront in their question. And that's where this came from. This was given to us in a very aggregate. We don't have a specific applicant that this is coming from, but it was a new question for us from the licensing team. And so it could be more prevalent than what we are aware of. Or it could be, you know, again, with some of the changes in education, different things that we've seen post COVID, that this is just something that's maybe becoming a bit more prevalent. And given that it was a new one, we wanted to bring it for clarification.
Paul, you had your hand up there.
Yeah, I just want to say that that was a major part of my bachelor's degree. I had worked in the field for 12 years and then went back to get my bachelor's. And the stuff that they were teaching in the 400 level classes, I was way past that. And I was able to prove my knowledge and test out of those classes that, you know, yes, I know how to write an obituary. Yes, I know how to meet with a family. Yes, I know there, you know, embalming techniques that were not even being taught in school. So it was a major help for me while I was working to try to get my bachelor's degree.
Yeah, appreciate that comment. Anyone else have any input on this? I would simply say if it's in line with the statute, I don't see why we wouldn't. I don't have a. I can't think of a reason why we wouldn't accept it. I will freely admit that I am not a funeral director, so that's just my cemeterian view of things.
All right.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is Pete, and I agree with what Paul said. And I think this kind of lends itself along the avenues of what we're looking at about trying to get quality people in, and you know, not necessarily simplify the process, but if you've demonstrated the knowledge, then, and it's on your transcript, so it's official from the college, I don't know why the board wouldn't accept that.
Yeah. Thank you, Pete. I think, yeah, that's kind of the line that I'm going down is maybe making a motion and just kind of spitballing, but that as long as the credits are accepted by an accredited institution, you know, the how those credits were reached, whether it was sitting in a class or clipping out of it, is not something. I mean, you know, if we're going to dig into every credit on every, you know, institution, but if it's, so my motion would be if it's meets our requirements and it's by an accredited institution, that we accept it.
I don't know that you need to, I don't know that you need to vote on that. It's in your law that you have to accept the 60 semester or 90 credit quarter hours of instruction. So it says at a school. I think if they're accepting, if the college is accepting the credit hours, then you don't have a choice, really. You can't say, well, but we're not going to, even though you, college, accepted those credit hours, we're not going to. At least that's my thought. I don't know that you need to vote on it. Okay. I think it's outside your authority to deny those credits.
Interesting. Okay. Well, I think in general, at least from the board's perspective, we seem to be all in favor of, you know, the concept, whether we have the authority or not. So
I think just having the general direction and agreement of the board, just kind of reaffirming that these credits are acceptable. And then we'll work with the AG's office just to double check that all of the bases have been covered, but just really kind of needed that affirmation from the board.
Great. Appreciate that. And I thank you, Elizabeth, for your clarification and comments when it comes to statutory issues. All right. Well, thank you so much. Moving forward to agenda item 7, complaint cases for review. Each one of these needs a motion to approve or to deny the case manager recommendation. And we'll start with item 7.1, Dante.
Sure. This will be case 2024-07-1764-00-FDE. Summary, the complainant alleges that the respondent funeral home failed to show up with casketed remains for her sister's graveside service. Facts, the respondent funeral home contracted with the complainant for a graveside service on May 4th at 11 a.m. An employee for the respondent funeral home misread an email that said the service would be the 4th of May 11th a.m. and entered the date of service as May 11th. An attorney for the respondent funeral home characterized the error as a simple misreading. The simple misreading resulted in the complainant conducting their ceremony without their loved one present at the time they had contracted the respondent to provide that service. The complainant initially accepted a refund of professional service fees, but has subsequently been offered a complete refund. The complainant's sister was buried later in the day on May 4th after the respondent funeral home had learned of their error and the attendees had left, the attendees of the service. The respondent funeral home states that they maintain a master service schedule, but does not seem to offer a solution that would keep one employee from misreading one email, creating a similar situation. While this error does not quite rise to the level of unprofessional conduct as described in the RCW 18.39.410, it does warrant a letter of education suggesting that processes be looked at that will help avoid these issues. So I'm recommending that we close this with a letter of education.
All right. Thank you, Dante. Is there a motion to that effect?
This is Paul. I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Paul. Do we have a second?
This is Rick. I'll second it.
Thank you, Rick. Is there any discussion?
This is Pete. Has the letter been drafted and sent, approved?
I was actually going to bring that up. I opened all my emails this morning. I have several of these that are letter of education. And did I miss something or did things not get sent? Because no, the answer to your question, Pete, is no. I have not seen the letter of education on this.
Okay.
Perhaps the motion would need to be amended to something similar to approving the letter or approving his recommendation on the assumption that he approves that Dante approves the content of the letter of education.
This is Paul. I'll make that motion to include that.
And this is Rick. I'll go ahead and second it.
Thank you, Rick. Any discussion on that piece? I would just simply comment that I agree that the process would need to be, I mean, if we're accepting this scheduling based on an email that comes through, I think that process needs to be fortified fairly significantly. So I would make sure that letter of education includes that piece.
Amen.
Any further discussion? All right. Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, hearing none, motion passes. Thank you. Moving on to agenda item 7.2. Dante again.
All right. This one will be case number 2024-08-2096-00-FDE. The complainant alleges that respondent disinterred a deceased individual prior to obtaining a disinterment permit. Also, the complainant alleges that the respondent threatened an intern because the complainant knew about this issue. Subsequently, the complainant alleges that the bodies were stored unrefrigerated while she was employed with the funeral home the respondent manages. And finally, the complainant alleges that the respondent threatened to bury her and she would have a hard time continuing to work in the funeral industry. Facts. The respondent acknowledges he and the intern and intern disinterred an individual prior to receiving a disinterment permit. The intern made the arrangement and was unaware that the permit was required. The respondent is well aware that a permit is required, but failed to make sure one was issued due to being focused on the affidavit for correction of the deceased date on the deceased death certificate. The respondent attempted to get the permit the same day as the disinterment. The disinterment was completed. The remains of the deceased were taken to the respondent funeral home, and the permit was obtained the next day. The complainant had no involvement in this process other than to reach out to the cemetery authority after the fact and to file this complaint. As to the intern being threatened after this incident, neither the respondent nor the intern make mention of this allegation. As to the allegation that bodies were being stored without refrigeration, the respondent admits that during COVID-19 challenged his group's refrigeration capacity and states that his group has added 25 more spaces. And as to the allegation that the respondent threatened the complainant, there is currently a trial pending in Superior Court against the complainant related to her employment with the respondent funeral group. And with all of that, we're going to go ahead and recommend, because of the disinterment prior to the permit, that there be a letter of education.
Okay. Thank you, Dante. Quite a bit here. I would ask for a motion to that effect.
This is Pete. I'll so move.
Thank you, Pete. Is there a second?
This is Paul. I'll second.
Thank you, Paul. All right, opening it up for discussion.
This is Dante. If you guys want to add to all these letter of education ones pending review of that letter, I would not mind that at all.
Okay. I think you haven't received it.
Yeah, well, again, so there were none of the letters. Most of these are letter of education. None of those letters I've seen.
All right. Is there a motion to that effect?
This is Pete. I'll go ahead and amend my motion to accept based on the acceptance of what's in the letter by Dante.
This is Paul, and I'll second Pete. That with that amendment.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Any questions or comments on the letter of education associated with the latent permit issue? And if I'm just for clarification, Dante, the letter of education is specifically about that piece and not the other parts of this complaint.
I would hope that the primary focus of that letter is, the knowingly, the knowingly disinterring without the permit and trying to fix it the same day, as opposed to just stopping the disinterment and then waiting for the fix before moving forward with the disinterment. Yes.
Okay. And then relative to the refrigeration, can you provide some context or further detail as to what transpired?
Sure. I don't know that I communicated it well necessarily in the paragraph, but basically the allegation, I believe, has been addressed already with the 25 extra spots.
Gotcha. Okay. Any further comments or questions? All right. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Aye.
All right. Sounds like the motion passes. Thank you, Dante.
Aye.
All right. We will move on to item 7.3. Dante again.
Perfect. So this one will be case 2024-09-2440-00-FDE. The complainant alleges that the respondent funeral home failed to honor their religious traditions by not allowing certain items to be cremated and delaying the witness cremation by 2 hours while items were inventoried and their deceased was taken out of a rental casket. The complainant also alleges that the services of the respondent funeral home were unacceptable due to a lack of communication, respect, empathy, and sensitivity. Facts: the complainant and her cousin initially met with the respondent funeral home after the death of the complainant's father. The complainant's family requested a different arranger from the respondent funeral home and had a subsequent meeting where a chapel service followed by witness cremation were scheduled. In their response, the respondent funeral home focused on the fact that the next of kin signed a contract stipulating a rental casket. From the response of the complainant and others present at the witnessing, it appears as if the process for a rental casket was not clearly communicated and understood. Also, the complainant states that they had requested similar services for another family member where a rental casket was not used. The respondent stated that the intern who arranged the services was not aware of that request. In their response, the respondent also relies heavily on its policy for what and what cannot be cremated. Again, from the response of the complainant and those present at the witnessing, it appears that this was not clearly communicated at the arrangement. While no laws were broken, it seems apparent that respondent did not adequately communicate with or understand the traditions of the complainant's family. The respondent not only offered a casket for the cremation, but also refunded the cost of the services. further training on best practices for serving the complainant's community and communicating expectations and policies is advised. And I would put that advice in a letter of education. That is my recommendation.
All right. Thank you so much. And I would look for a motion to approve the recommendation and also Dante reviewing the letter of education prior to sending it out.
This is Paul. I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Paul.
This is Rick. I'll second it.
Thank you, Rick. Any discussion or questions? All right. Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Motion passes. Thank you so much. Moving on to agenda item 7.4, Dante.
Sure. This one's 2024-11-3185-00-FDE. Summary, the complainant's daughter to the deceased alleges that the respondent failed to file the death certificate for her father within the allotted 5 days. Facts, the deceased died on September 28, 2024. The respondent created the record and assigned it to the primary, to the deceased primary physician on September 30th, 2024. The primary physician did not sign the respondent, and the respondent repeatedly contacted their office until October 16th, 2024. On October 16th, the respondent contacted both the medical examiner's office and the decedent's wife and was able to get another doctor to whom she could assign the death certificate. The cremation took place on October 17th, 2024. Cremated remains were mailed and received on October 23rd, 2024. The respondent refunded the deceased spouse the costs for the arrangements. While the respondent cannot force medical providers to sign death certificates, she could have contacted the medical investigator's office as well as the deceased's wife in a more timely manner. And again, I would advise that in a letter of education. That is my recommendation.
All right. Thank you, Dante. I would look for a motion to accept that recommendation pursuant to Dante reviewing the letter of education.
This is Pete. So move.
Thank you, Pete. We have a second.
This is Paul. I'll second.
Thank you, Paul. Any discussion? Questions?
Well, this is Pete. I would just make the point that this has been a bone of contention for funeral directors forever. We're required to get a death certificate filed, but we can't force medical officers to do anything. So it's a common problem.
All right. Thank you. Looking forward to the vote. All in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. Thank you so much. Moving on to agenda item 7.5, Dante.
Sure. This one will be case number 2024-12-3700-00-FDE. Summary, the complainant alleges that the respondent funeral home did not provide adequate staff for the transfer of her mother's remains from her residence. Facts, death occurred on December 24, 2024, Christmas Eve, and the funeral home was contacted at 7:07 a.m. by hospice. The respondent funeral home arrived at the residence at 12:30 with one transfer associate. The transfer associate was unable to transfer the deceased onto the cot and into the van without the assistance of the complainant and her sister. The manager for the respondent funeral home responded that the transfer associate was responsible for dispatching himself alone and maintaining the transfer equipment. No mention was made of training with the transfer equipment. The deceased was not placed into refrigeration until 6 hours after the transfer. The transfer associate stated that this was because he had to deliver other deceased he had in his vehicle to another facility prior to taking the complainant's mother to the facility they were using. The manager for the respondent funeral home stated that it was their policy to send two transfer associates to a residential death call, but she was unclear if this was written policy. So policy should be unambiguous and employees should be supervised and trained. So putting that all into a letter of education so that the onus is more on management rather than an individual out there in the field who's which way I'm heading.
Okay. Thank you, Dante. Looking for a motion to accept that recommendation, again, pursuant to Dante reviewing the letter of education.
This is Paul. I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Paul.
This is Pete. I'll second.
Thank you, Pete. Any discussions or questions on this case?
This is Pete. I just have one. I was a little confused. Was the transfer associate an employee of the respondent, or was this a third-party transfer service?
It was an employee. So basically, the way the – and you can double-check me on this one. I don't know if it was Riley or Pam, but it seemed like they were kind of trying to put the blame on the employee rather than, themselves as the organization for the training and the management of that employee. I understand it was Christmas Eve. I understand things get hard and you try to do things, but again, I didn't, he did it on his own. Well, you're responsible for him.
Right. Okay. Thanks for clarifying that.
Any further questions or comments? All right, hearing none, all in favor of the recommendation, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, motion passes. Thank you. All right, one more from Dante, agenda item 7.6.
All right. So this one's case 2025-02-0443-00 FDE. The summary, complainant alleges the respondent violated at least one law by requiring an additional urn to be purchased, misrepresenting the activities performed at the location, and delaying cremation by 19 days. So the facts, the complainant's mother died on December 14, 2024. As part of a member association, the complainant was offered a list of cremation providers to choose from. He chose the respondent based on their address. At the time of the transfer, the complainant was informed that the location he chose was strictly an arrangement facility and that his mother was being transferred to another location for sheltering and cremation. The complainant did not choose a different provider at that time. As to the respondent requiring an additional urn, the contract indicates $50 for a minimum temporary urn and $40 for a basic cremation container. It appears as if the complainant does not understand the difference and the requirement. It also appears if the respondent could have communicated that better. As to the cremation being delayed 19 days, the respondent states that they had that they tell their customers that cremation will be completed 10 to 15 days after payment. Because the respondent offered to make arrangements at a location separate from the one chosen by the complainant, and the complainant was not able or willing to go to that location, electronic arrangements were made, and the complainant paid on December 20th, 2024. The complainant's mother was cremated on January 3rd, 2025, 14 days after that payment. The complainant alleges that he was told that part of the delay was due to vital records being closed for the holidays. Vital Records was only closed for 2 days, Christmas and New Year's. The death certificate was signed on December 20th, 24, and was filed on December 31st, 2024. After cremation was complete, the complainant made an appointment to receive his mother's cremated remains at the location initially chosen because of their address. He stated that the office space for this location is not what is pictured in the respondent's advertisement. It is not. It is a suite used for the purpose of releasing cremated remains. The respondent did not have cremated remains for the complainant on the day scheduled. The respondent delivered the cremated remains to the complainant's home on a Saturday because they didn't have the cremains there. The complainant asked for and received a discount for services. No laws appear to be broken, but the complainant's expectations and the respondent's service delivery could have been better addressed. So on this one, I'm going to recommend a letter of education, specifically for miscommunicating reasons for the delay in getting a burial transit permit, and also for using a photo of a location, one location, while advertising another.
Right. Thank you, Dante. Be looking for a motion to approve the recommendation with review of the letter of education.
This is Pete. Also move.
Thank you, Pete. Is there a second?
This is Rick. I'll second it.
Thank you, Rick. Any discussion? All right. Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Thank you. Dante, you get a little bit of a break here.
Thank you all.
Moving on to agenda item 7.7, Rick.
Okay. This is case number 2024-07-1677-00CEM. The complainant reported that a burial took place without the death certificate being filed or the burial transit permit issued for the disposition. The facts are a social worker reached out to the funeral home in question to ask what a family needed to do after an infant's death. The funeral director stated that the family could act as the funeral director, provide shelter and transport the deceased to the cemetery as long as they had all the paperwork together, and that the funeral home would help them with no charge. A newborn died at 2 days old. The doctor started the death certificate through Wales and added the funeral home in question without any contact. Once the funeral home saw that they were the designated funeral home, they reached out to the hospital to get any information so they could make contact with the family. The funeral home was not successful in contacting the family. The family did call back the funeral home to let them know that they were on the way to the cemetery and needed a death certificate. The funeral director explained that they needed a permit so that they can bury their infant and that they could not bury without the proper paperwork. The family called back an hour later and told the funeral home that they were not involved and that they were taking care of the documents by hand. The funeral director called the vital records to let them know of the issue, but did not reach out to the cemetery. The family who was familiar with the staff at the cemetery delivered their infant for the ceremony and the burial. The cemetery officials did not ask for a permit. Once the mistake was realized, the family reached out to another funeral home who then took care of the death certificate and permit dated 10 days after the burial. The funeral home in question never had any custody of the infant's remains. Even though the funeral home did not reach out to the cemetery should not have done the burial without the permit. I recommend that this case be closed with a letter of education to the cemetery that they should not accept a decedent for burial without the burial burial permit itself.
All right. Thank you, Rick.
And I have not received a letter yet.
Okay, so we would look for a motion to approve the recommendation again, subsequent to Rick being able to review the letter of education.
This is Paul. I'll make that motion.
Thank you, Paul.
This is Pete. I'll second.
Thank you, Pete. All right. Discussion or comments?
This is Pete. Has this cemetery had any other previous violations or anything like this before, or history of doing this prior to this one?
I'm not familiar of any. I don't know if Pam or knows.
This is Pam. I don't think this cemetery's had any issues previous to this.
They have not had any issues prior to this. Sorry, this is Riley. And none since this complaint was received.
Okay, thanks.
For clarification, Rick, the respondent is the cemetery or the funeral home in this particular complaint?
It's actually the funeral home itself. Oh, the cemetery, excuse me. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, it's the cemetery. Okay. All right. Okay.
Sorry about that. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. All right. Any further questions? All right. All in favor of the recommendation, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right. Motion passes. Moving on to item 7.8, Paul.
This complaint alleges that the respondent funeral home failed to disclose additional charges to receive cremated remains, should say, on a weekend. Additionally, the complaint alleges that the viewing room was too warm and the decedent's body had condensation, which they described as sweat of embalming fluid during the viewing. Facts of the case, during the investigation, it was confirmed that the decedent was not embalmed. There was condensation as seen in a photo due to the heat generated by two crematories down the hall from the viewing room. The complaint stated that the date the remains would be picked up, the funeral director was not in the office or near a calendar and did not realize that the date given was a weekend. Because of that, there was no discussion regarding the additional fees for weekend calls. The complainant ultimately did not receive the remains that day and had another family member pick them up later that week. My recommendation for this is a letter of education to make sure that these folks are, know their days and schedule when they're going to have folks come to pick up, because if we don't, then we don't have the discussions about those other charges. This is an opportunity to help them. That's my take on it.
All right. Thank you, Paul. And Paul, have you reviewed the letter of education?
I have not received a letter of education, so.
Okay. All right. So we would be entertaining a motion for to approve the recommendation based on Paul's report, but subsequent to his approval of the letter of education.
This is Rick. So move.
This is Dante. I'll go ahead and second that motion.
All right. Thank you. Any discussion, questions, or comments? All right. Hearing none. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, motion passes. Moving on to agenda item 7.9, Paul again.
Case number 2024-12-35420-FDE. The complaint alleges that the contracted transport company had acquired business by passing itself off as the contracting funeral home in their advertisements and while staff were performing their official duties. The investigation found out this was all due to a Google search. The respondent contracts with Google directly to advertise the business and bids on sponsored advertising space. Bidding on sponsored space results in prioritizing of the webpage associated and appear as sponsored ads in the Google searches. The Google algorithm is responsible for determining which results appear and in what order. This is not a direct action taken by the transport company. I recommend that we close this with no further action. Simply stated, it was a Google search and the ad came up first, and that's what the complainant clicked on.
All right, thank you. Be looking for a motion to approve the recommendation upon review of the letter of education. Oh, I'm sorry, there is no letter of education. We need to close this without no further action.
This is Pete, so move.
Thank you, Pete.
This is Rick, I'll second it.
Thank you, Rick. We have a first and a second. Any discussion?
So this is Dante. I think I got this from what you said, Paul. The people Google funeral home or crematory or whatever, they were alleging these people advertised themselves as, and then these people came up because they had paid to be prioritized as an ad.
Well, what happens with the Google search, the complainant who owns a funeral service typed in his funeral service name, okay? And the other place came up as a sponsored place. Now, if you search something on Google, Google remembers all that information, and it plugs that stuff into its algorithm, so you get, what's the word I'm looking for? Familiar results, and then sponsored results as well.
I'm fine with that. All right.
Any further questions? All right. Hearing none, all in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, motion carries. Okay, we are on agenda item 7.10, Paul.
Case number 2025-01-03-44-00-FDE. The complaint summary says the next of kin and other family members from out of state were upset that estranged family members held a public memorial service for the deceased at a funeral home in Washington State without notifying the next of kin that it was occurring. Facts. There are no known requirements in the RCW or the WAC for this type of notification. There was no financial burden placed on the next of kin regarding this memorial service. The Washington State Funeral Home was contracted by family members that were excluded from the next of kin arrangements. Final disposition arrangements were arranged and conducted by the next of kin and their contracted non-Washington State Funeral Home. I recommend we close this with no further action. This was just a case of family members who didn't get to go to the service having their own service.
All right. Thank you so much. Is there a motion to that effect?
This is Dante. I'll move.
Give a second.
This is Pete. I'll second.
Thank you, Pete. All right, any discussion? All in favor of the motion, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion carries. Moving on to item 7.11, Rick.
Okay, this is case number 2023. 2705-00FDE. The complaint states that the funeral home failed to cremate the complainant's father in a reasonable amount of time. There was also a lack of communication as to where the complainant's father's remains were being held. The funeral home also failed to dress and take fingerprints of the decedent. The facts. From the date of the death to the cremation was 10 days. The crematory cremated the decedent the day after the funeral home stated that the cremation would be done. Prints were taken electronically and was sent by email to the person who had the right to control disposition, which was not the complainant. As far as the dressing of the decedent, the staff member did not particularly remember dressing this decedent since they dressed so many. All of this is due to an unfortunate lack of communication with the complainant's family. There was no violations in this complaint. I recommend this to be closed with no further action.
All right. Thank you, Rick. We have a motion to that effect.
This is Pete. So I'll move.
It's Pete.
This is Paul. I'll second.
Thank you, Paul. Any discussion or comments? Just to verify, Rick, the complainant in this case was not the person with the right to control disposition.
No, it was not.
Okay. All right. No further discussion. All in favor of the recommendation to close? Say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? All right, motion carries. Agenda item 7.12.
This is case number 2020031660FDE. The board received an anonymous complaint alleging unlicensed practice being conducted by the respondent. During the course of the investigation, it was verified that the respondent does not hold an active funeral establishment license and has had the previously held license revoked. Since action has been taken on the more recent complaints and the establishment has had the establishment license revoked, I'm recommending that this case be closed with no further action. Basically, there is no establishment that the board still has jurisdiction over.
All right. Thank you, Pete. We have a motion.
This is Rick. So moved.
Thank you, Rick.
This is Dante. I'll go ahead and second it.
Thank you, Dante. Any discussion? All right. Hearing none, all in favor of the recommendation, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions? Motion passes. All right. Moving on to Section 8, Reports, Item 8.1A, Pet Cemetery Review Committee Report. I'll turn it over to Sydney.
All right. Thank you very much. This will be a very brief update. We really don't have any updates at this point. As the board will remember, late last year, we had received a quick update on the language that had been proposed regarding the pet cemeteries. And there had been some concerns raised both through Representative Orwell's office as well as by the Department of Archaeology and Historic Preservation. We have not had any contact regarding this topic since then, but we know that Representative Orwell was quite busy throughout the legislative session, which has just recently adjourned within the last several weeks. So I imagine we will hear something over the summer, but there's nothing new to report at this point.
All right. Thank you, Sydney. Appreciate the continued work and in the background there with DAP and DOL. So, all right. Moving on to 8.1B, disposition facility equipment. The committee will provide an update. I think that was I was not able to be in attendance, but Vice Chair Gutierrez Zamora and Board Member Cameron.
Well, this is Pete. Just a quick update. We did have our first meeting, and we agreed that we needed to gather some more information and bring in some more expert opinions from the board inspectors. And we have a second meeting scheduled. I think it's June 10th, if I've got it written down right. So we'll be meeting again and proceeding.
All right. Thank you, Pete. We will move on to item 8.2, staff reports. Sydney.
All right. So we will start off with our complaint status report. This is current as of May 9th. Right now, we have two cases that are still in complaint intake, five that are in investigation, one that is in a legal review, 32 that are in a management review, 12 of which we cleared today, 34 cases that have been closed for a grand total of 74 cases. Are there any questions on the complaint status report? Okay, then we can move on to the licensee count report. As the board will remember, we are going to be moving doing the deep dive on the statistics from the quarterly basis to an annual basis so that we can get a bigger idea of the trends over the course of the year, but was included in the packet for the board. So were there any questions on that?
Thank you.
Okay. Then with our legislative update, very, very quick one. As the board will recall, at the last meeting, we had three potential pieces of legislation that had been introduced impacting this program. One of them, our move for consolidating the funeral and cemetery program account to the business and professions account, our O6L designated account, that was signed and by the governor on Monday, May 12th, that has moved forward and that will be effective as of January 1 of 2026. Then we had two other pieces of legislation that were introduced. One discussed prearranged funeral services and the other one was for family burial grounds. Neither of those bills passed. So were there any questions on the legislative update? Okay, and I will turn it over to Alyssa to review the action item list for you.
So on May 2nd of 2022, the Licensing Future Task Force Committee report and recommendation was added to the action item list, and this is still in progress. November 30th of 2023, the Pets Cemetery Review Committee, this is still in progress, and Sydney had actually commented on this earlier, so there's nothing currently, but we'll update as we have more information. November 20th of 2024, staff will provide draft WAC language update to the board for approval at the next meeting. This is still in progress. And then staff will schedule a disposition facility equipment subcommittee meeting with a report out at the next meeting that has been complete. Board staff will work with board member Cameron as a voting delegate for the ICFSEB annual conference, and that is complete. assign public comments regarding licensee counts to the licensing future task force. That is complete. Ms. Muley to schedule a meeting with the chair and vice chair to prepare the priorities and goals discussion for the next meeting. That has been completed. And then we had moved some cases from the last meeting to this meeting. So those are now complete. And I All believe right. that is it. Yep.
Thank you, Alyssa. All right. We will now move to the public comment section of the meeting. The public may address the board on matters within the board's jurisdiction, either verbally during the meeting or by submitting written comments in advance. Verbal comments are limited to 1 3-minute comment. Written comments are limited to no more than 500 words and must be emailed to board staff no less than two business days prior to the meeting. In response to all public comments, the board is limited to requesting that the matter be added to a future agenda for discussion or directing staff to study the matter further. Inflammatory comments and language will not be permitted. All right, looks like we have one hand up here, Casey.
Thank you, board. I have a question following up the 6.2 conversation around the licensing of future task force discussion addressing the shortfall of licensed funeral directors in lieu of the rising death rate we're observing in our state. My question is couched under my understanding that one of the primary functions of this body is to be reviewing complaints from the general public and policing actors in the funeral home and cemetery sectors. My question in response to something that was raised by this board was, why not pursue a path of abolishing all education requirements for funeral director licensure? To help balance this, I know this board could increase its policing of bad actors, could make more use of publicly denouncing individual actors, or even do things like levy fees based on reports from bad actors. I feel like I've heard in just this session alone, this board administering a lot of letters of education to people that were reported to this board. Does this board have the ability to strip individual actors of their license? Did this board have the ability to administer warnings, which may tally up but then lead to later licensure strippings? And does this board have the ability to administer fines to individual actors? Thank you. I'll yield my time.
All right. Thank you. With that, I guess there are some items in there that we would perhaps be able to discuss in the Licensing Future Task Force Committee. So perhaps I would maybe look to Sydney to add that to our next discussion.
Yes, and I would also be happy to have a phone conversation with Mr. Hussman and address some of his other concerns as well, if the board would like.
I think that would be appropriate. Okay. All right. I don't see any other hands up. Are there any other comments? All right. Appears to be none. We'll move on to agenda item 10, the conclusion, item 10.1, announcements. Do any board members have any announcements or additional reports that they would like to make at this time?
This is Pete. It's not really an announcement, but just kind of a generalized question since it was brought up at the beginning of the meeting. Could we get a quick update on addressing the vacancies on the board? Everybody knows we're running a little bit short, but are there any applicants in the process or status of going through getting approval? Can you just update us on that real quick?
Yeah, so we can't talk about it too much because this isn't an agendized item, but I can let the board know that we are still struggling to get applicants, and we are still working with the governor's office on getting appointments made timely. So we're continuing to work on it, but if anybody out there would like to apply, or if any of you know particularly of a cemeterian who that's the position that we are down right now, would be interested in applying, we could certainly use the applicants.
I would concur. All right. Thank you, Pete. Moving on to agenda item 10.2, requests for future agenda items. Are there any additional future agenda items that have not yet been discussed that any board members would like to request for the next meeting? All right, hearing none, we'll move on to item 10.3, review of action items and items for the next meeting. Alyssa, will you please review the action items list?
Yes. So I have from item 5.2, we said that Dave Itner and Rick Little will serve on the rulemaking committee. So I will schedule some meetings for all of us, and including Pam and Riley. And then also the task force will continue to meet to determine alternative pathways to licensure. And then I did also hear that in, I think, item 5.3 during goals and priorities, that the disposition facility equipment committee would continue to meet. And then, let's see, Sydney will address the public comment and bring, bring conversation to the licensing future task force if necessary. And then I guess I'm wondering, would you all like a recruitment update added to our next agenda, just so that's something that we can consistently keep you updated on?
I don't see the harm in that. I think that would be ideal.
Okay. Otherwise, I think that's all I have. And if I've missed anything, please let me know.
Thank you, Alyssa. All right. That leaves us to agenda item number 11, adjournment. The time is now 11:26 a.m., and this meeting is officially adjourned. Thank you so much for attending. Appreciate everyone's time and effort, and have a great day.
Okay. You as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.